This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to This Week in Wrestling, Indies and International. I'm Pete, and I'm joined with Timothy. Timothy, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Pete. Had a nice long week of wrestling, a nice long month of wrestling, and looking to talk to you about it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And today, we're going to discuss the NXT special, TakeOver, and we have a special guest. We have Devin Hales joining us. You guys might have heard him on the on plenty of the Place to Be Nation reaction shows. We recently did the Rumble one with Chris Zellner. Devin, welcome aboard, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on. I've been hiding in my room from the Rumble flu-ridden Dylan Hales, my brother. So as the Rumble flu has attacked many people, I think, including Frey and others on Twitter, who was assembled in San Antonio. So, but yeah, I'm doing good.
Yeah,
is there any truth to the rumors that Dylan didn't just get Rumble flu, but that he was actually patient zero, and it was originally a Bay Area bronchitis that he had brought back with him?
I don't know about that, but Frey did tweet today that he thought that it might have been James Ellsworth who was patient zero for the because as the photos of them hanging out with James Ellsworth at Dave and Buster's have been posted on Twitter. So
I know I got a cold and a sore throat that has finally got over, and I got the day I left from San Antonio, and which is odd. Is I get to work and like everyone is sick, so I think it might not have just been a Rumble San Antonio thing. I think it might have been just the Texas allergies and that on the weird weather swings, because it went from like hot to cold to cold to hot while we're in San Antonio and stuff. So
it does that here in Chattanooga all the time. So yeah,
anything's possible. But hey, let's talk about some more fascinating things than sickness and death and flus. Let's talk about the special. I was there live. I saw all your family and I saw your dad. That's a whole entire phenomenon in and of itself. Live, it was an incredible show that it came across on, and I thought it came across pretty well on TV. Now, Devin, how do you think the crowd came across on the TV?
Oh, I think they came across really well. I think they do it pretty much every TakeOver special, especially in the big in the bigger buildings. And yeah, I thought the crowd was excellent.
Yeah,
for sure.
What about you, Timothy?
Yeah, Texas crowds seem to all be pretty great, but you know, the bigger crowd here for WWE works out in its Rumble, so you're getting out of towners as well. And for the show that we all kind of talked about and said it had the least amount of buzz, you couldn't tell from the crowd reactions. They were hot to see these guys, and you know, they probably just want to make sure that they get more shows out their way coming on later, which is an interesting phenomenon that you start to see with WWE as they tour and NXT as it tours, is places where it's very clear that they're trying to be game and be a good crowd so that they can get more shows coming back more regularly.
Yeah, and it was even weirder. I mean, like, did both of you guys see the Royal Rumble?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, like, Rude and Nakamura on the show, I felt came across as more gigantic stars than arguably two of the biggest superstars of all time, or this year, in Styles and Cena. Both had really good matches, but it felt like Rude and Nakamura, from crowd reaction, even seemed like even bigger stars than Cena and Styles. Do you feel that's the case, Devin, or am I just overshooting my load here?
I think that's probably not a crazy thing to say, because I think both matches probably did have equal heat at least. And you know, you were in the building for both shows, so I don't think that's crazy. You know, Dylan told me that there was like, it was like a split crowd, you know, 50-50 in the Rude Nakamura match, and it was really loud and had great heat. So you know, I can definitely agree that they were at least on equal footing as far as crowd reaction goes, because that TakeOver main event was really, really, really loud, and that's how it came across watching on TV. So,
what about you, Timothy?
Yeah, I think I probably agree similarly to Devin that it came across, I think, probably closer to equal, just with probably. I mean, the main event of TakeOver was probably really built more to have kind of more emotion. Not to say that Cena and AJ didn't, but Cena and AJ had a lot more oohs and ahs and fireworks, and Nakamura and Rude was a lot more of, you know, stuff at biting and the big crowd kind of ebbs and flows of reaction. So I can definitely see that probably feeling a lot more authentic and a lot bigger in person. But on tape, I mean, both matches seem to have a lot of heat.
Yeah, for sure. And the one thing I thought was really different is, I mean, the building sizes were remarkably different. I mean, Freeman Coliseum, I think, holds 7,000 or 8,000, which I want to say it was an incredible building to watch something live in, because there wasn't like it didn't seem like there was a bad eye line to the ring at all by where anybody was sitting. Well, you couldn't say that about the Rumble, which I think they claimed 54,000 people in the building. But the Rude Nakamura thing, I mean, people were singing their theme songs and the chanting even way before the show even started. It came across like a once in a lifetime type of a thing, like a Briscoe Funk or a Flair Steamboat or a Hogan Savage, Hogan Warrior type of vibe to it, where in one of those things where you know, if this happened in 1987, you would instantly remember it because of the way the television was set up, where it wasn't so quickly, and where you had times to digest stuff, as opposed to nowadays, where everything is so wham bam, thank you ma'am-ish, and if you will. But let's get on to the show proper. And the opening match was Ty Dillinger versus Eric Young. Now, Timothy, what were your feelings about the match?
I thought it was an interesting match from the start. I think Ty's jacket here that he ends up wearing the next day at the Rumble too just looked super weird. Like from the get-go, that was like a odd thing to me. It's got like the big shoulders that look like antennas or something. And EY's offering him a better jacket because he also thinks it looks goofy from the beginning. But Ty kind of shoves him off. And from there, I mean, Ty's shine segment was like nothing. It just seemed to go by so quick for Eric Young to then take over. And I thought Killian Dane with the crossbody on the floor looked really fucking good. Eric Young has an aggressiveness to his wrestling when he's on top here that he hasn't shown in, you know, he didn't show for a very long time in TNA, which I think is great, especially for a guy who's been wrestling for so long. And I really loved a lot of, like, he was using hanging submissions and standing on the middle rope, mitigating a height disadvantage solidly throughout, which I thought was great. So yeah, I thought that there was some good stuff here, but I mean, I think it went by really quick, and I thought that the finish was just kind of, I don't know, I think the finish was they're trying to get a little bit too cute with the skin the cat into the wheelbarrow, into the neck breaker. It was kind of nice because it is trademarks for both guys, but I think it was a little bit much for me in that regard. I gave it 2 3/4 star. I think it just kind of was underneath that really great level, but still very good, especially for an opening match with two older Canadian guys who I think that most people would say have no chance of making it in the WWE in this day and age, and they are two of the more over guys in NXT right now.
I think it's funny you did mention the jacket. Is I ordered a beer from one of the beer vendors, and he sat next to me for like 5 minutes, or it felt like an eternity, actually. And he mentioned about his ring jacket that it reminded him of Ming the Merciless, so which was actually like a Johnny Sorrow reference, and which I found rather odd. So the jacket did stand out, not just to wrestling fans, but to the beer vendors also. Devin. What were your feelings here, man?
It was okay. The one thing that I do like about it is that, you know, Ty Dillinger's really over. And a lot of people say, well, it's just a gimmick. I don't see any problem if it's just a gimmick. I just I'm just happy for the guy that he's really over it and finally getting, you know, to get a good spotlight, because this is a guy who's been in WWE developmental for what, 10, 12 years now?
Yeah, never.
Off and on.
Yeah.
So I mean, I remember when he was Gavin Spears and WWE ECW like 9 years ago. So it's good to see him be really over. As the match itself, it was okay. I really don't like Eric Young's like worm wriggling around on the mat selling. I thought that was terrible. Like, that was my biggest issue with Eric Young in the match. Is on offense, he was fine. I just didn't like his like weird, like, I don't know, just like wriggling around on the mat selling. It just it really bothered me. But as far as the interference and stuff goes, I liked it at first. I think they went a little bit overboard with it. I think it went on too long, even though I think the point was that the numbers game were going to eventually catch up to Ty, and they did. But I still think the interference was a little bit excessive. But as far as an opener, I thought it was a decent opener, and Ty's a great guy to open a show because he's so over with the crowd.
Yeah, totally. He was super over, and it was kind of like an exclamation point statement on him, on how over he was. And then, I mean, then he, you know, translated into the Rumble the next night. But I'm kind of with you on the interference and went a little overboard. But over, for the most part, I thought they did a really good job working with the guys on the outside, where it didn't come across as too overly complicated. But I did like the underlying story of how Sanity always had the numbers and they beat the crap out of Ty throughout the angle and the build, and then they still had the numbers and Ty just wasn't able to overcome it. So I did like that booking aspect of the match. But again, it was kind of paint by the numbers, shine, comeback, cutoffs. Young's offense looked pretty good, but yeah, I'm with you on the real weird when he was on defense. Kind of, he's just a weird bird. I don't know. And then again, Sanity isn't over, but they didn't come across as dead as they normally do on this special. I give it like 2 and 3/4 star. It wasn't blow away, but I thought it was a decent match to start the show. Now, Devin,
yeah.
What about Roderick and Cien Almas? What do you think about this one?
I thought it was really good. I'll even throw in a scoop here and say that it was, because I've done my January rankings, which I'm sure I will plug at the end of this. But it was the 10th match in the month of January. I had it number 10. So I thought it was really good. I thought they worked a really physical match. I thought that they paced it really well. I really like Almas. I think Sombra's better as a heel anyways. And he just has, just the small details and mannerisms down really well. And the facial expressions down as a heel, and he's better at that. And they were just really, really physical. Just a lot of good striking, in a lot of ways, a strike heavy match. Just kind of trading strikes, but selling good in between, and a really, really good finishing sequence. I loved how they built to Almas's DDT and all the counters and sequences to that. And of course, Roddy eventually, never got hit with it and hit his flying big boot for the win. But it was, I liked it a lot. I'd probably give it something like 3.5 stars. Yeah, it was like 10th on my rankings this month. So really good match.
Very strong match. What about you, Timothy? What were your feelings on this?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. Again, I think the physicality was great, but the smarmy dickishness that comes off of Cien is just palpable. I mean, the guy is the perfect heel. And again, it's, Triple H tried to, in that interview, say, why would you put a mask on this guy? And I just want to go, why would you try to make this guy a babyface? Because he comes across like a fucking prick. So, people in glass houses, as they say. Loved Cien's focus on the arm, and in some ways it plays into his finish, as he does the hammerlock DDT. So he's all over the arm the whole time, weakening up the arm, so then set up a hammerlock DDT. I mean, it's a bit of a stretch, right? But in some ways it works. It's kind of, you can see a shoulder separation with the impact there in the hammerlock. So that works for me. I liked Roddy continuously getting cut off here when he's going into his normal rush attacks, showing another side of him that was a little bit slowed down. And I like it because he's really showing that he's been able to adapt his style. He still comes across like Roddy. He still comes across gritty and mean and like a tough guy. And he still hits some of his, you know, going from 0 to 100, that kind of quick rebounding action. But he does it in a more toned down WWE way where he doesn't go from 0 to 100. He goes from 0 to 60. And then he kind of slowly makes his way up to 100 after kind of getting cut off here and there and doing some more storytelling to the match. So I really enjoyed that. I thought the finish was great. Those leaping knee strikes from Roddy always look so good. So I just love that as the setup for the sick kick to get the finish. And I gave this 3.25 star, and I agree with Devin. I mean, I haven't watched as much WWE this month from him, but I couldn't imagine it being outside of the top 10 for January.
Yeah, I liked it even more than both of you. I gave it 4 stars. I loved the hard-hitting action. I loved, I really did like Almas is working on over on Roddy's arm. And you know what? It's something people didn't put over enough is I thought Roddy sold that arm really well and pushed that narrative throughout the match. But yeah, it was they did so many neat stuff. I mean, that was hard hitting. You had him working holds. You had him go back and forth. You had good heat and good shine segments. It was really an exciting match, and I thought it was a way to. I thought it was a match that actually helped both guys. And I thought it was Cena Almas' best match, singles match I've seen him in NXT, and I felt this is a perfect springboard match to put Roddy in against Rude, where he could, you know, put Rude over before Rude ends up going up against Cassius Ohno, probably over at later on in the year, probably maybe SummerSlam time, because I'm assuming Roddy and Strong for Mania takeover. And I thought this was a perfect showcase for the guy, where match, and I'm always a four match that helps both guys. Timothy, what about DIY versus the Authors of Pain?
I was definitely proven wrong here, I think. I did not expect much, and I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was Occam. He really showed me a lot in this match. I mean, he was really impressive keeping up with Ciampa and cutting off Gargano and working over Gargano at times, I thought was great. The no-sell, there was good no selling, especially there was one particular one with an Enziguri from Gargano on Occam looking to kind of break up and get a hot tag, and Occam kind of registers the kick but keeps the hand on the foot and pulls him into the corner to tag out. And I thought that was just amazing for that kind of Jason coming out of the water moment where you go, oh shit, this guy's indestructible. And that was a lot of Occam selling it and the way it was put together. DIY made these guys look great. And again, I was going into this thinking this was going to be terrible, but I just thought there was no way. And I'm hearing people say, you know, this is barely a step down from, say, DIY versus Revival. And I can't argue with that. I think it's, you know, really solidly not quite as good. But, I mean, the emotion and the feeling of the match was definitely there. Totally different kind of structure with the indestructible monsters kind of just going full force at them and even taking Ciampa down. So I really enjoyed this, as I said. Lots of great bombs, lots of great perfectly timed no selling, registering here and there, a little bit of selling, great selling from both members of DIY, even Ciampa here. Ciampa's offense at times when they're, you know, throwing big dives and flying knees off the apron and all this, just super dynamic and great stuff here. I ended up giving it 3.5 stars. I really enjoyed the match I was very pleasantly surprised as it kept going and it kept going, and I kept feeling like this is getting better and better, and I was expecting this to stink.
This is my 4th-ranked match of the month. I thought it was incredible. In fact, I thought it was better than the final DIY Revival match. Not better than Toronto and Brooklyn. Those two are classics. But this match was really, really, really good. And I started to feel pretty good almost right away, because I thought they're playing the size dynamic really well here, you know, with Gargano and Ciampa using their speed and agility to kind of trick and wear out AOP at the start. And I thought it was a really good shine to start. And Yeah, of course, Gargano's great at selling, and when he had the chance to do that, he was really good at it. There was a brief period where they were stomping on Johnny in the corner that I thought things got slowed down a little bit too much. But then they picked it right back up, and the finishing stretch was amazing. I totally bit on the powerbomb near fall, the one that Ciampa kicked out of. I thought that was the finish, and that was I was totally in on the match after that. I really loved this is another good example of kind of the strike size difference, because you know if you recall in the DIY Revival tags, Ciampa would be in these big strike exchanges and would win, you know, with Dawson or whatever sometimes. And so when he gets in the striking chains and he's kicking, I don't know which one is which, unfortunately, one of the Authors of Pain down on their knees, kicking him, you know, with his kicks. They're no selling him. They're tying really well. And it's this really big spot, this really big moment. And you realize that DIY might not be able to beat these guys. And they also do excellent job of doing callbacks to the finishes of the Toronto match and of the NXT match on January 11th. They do the double armbar spot, which is broken up amazingly, by the way, where one of them breaks up and just throws them on top of the other. And then they do the great spot where they tease the double knees, which I think set up the finish, because they did AOP did their double powerbomb after that, and then their finisher to Ciampa to win. So yeah, I thought it was I'd probably go maybe 4.25. I thought it was really, really, really good.
Now, would either one of you guys think 2 years ago when this team showed up right before the Dusty Rhodes tag tournament, and meeting Johnny Gargano and Ciampa, do you guys thought they'd be a legitimate, like, one of the best tag teams in wrestling right now 2 years ago?
No.
Never, yeah,
no.
In a million years.
No.
Never. I never even think they would have good chemistry. I'm just shocked about how well these guys have come across. I mean, I've said it before, they're like the ugliest blowjob tag team I've ever seen, and they've they defy logic, and they just put out killer match after killer match. I mean, we've seen it so far this year with the Authors of Pain. We saw it on the Revival. We saw them have a good match with TM61. We saw them with Tajiri and Tozawa. I mean, different styles, different opponents, and they just bring it every single time. I can't tell you how I'm more impressed with this. And I feel Johnny Gargano, he was a guy on legitimately 2 or 3 years ago I absolutely detested as a worker. And he's a guy.
Stuck.
Yeah, he's a guy who's totally, totally got me in as a great face in peril. His spots, I think, work so much better in a tag team setting than as a singles guy. They don't seem cliche at all. They seem like great hope spots or great shine segments and stuff. And it's just mind-blowing what they've done here. And those guys should really be proud. I'm with you guys. I love the match, too. I gave it 4 stars for all the reasons you guys said. It far exceeded my expectations. I didn't think they were going to be able. At best, I thought they might be able to get a good match out of the Officer Pain. But, man, they had a near match of the year contender. I mean, it was fantastic stuff.
Now, would you say that it's kind of also interesting that the DIY have really been, like, involved in everything for the past, probably since they showed up, honestly, in NXT and kind of the rising of the brand to be more mainstream? I mean, as you said, they came in for the Dusty Classic. They were in the Cruiserweight tournament. They're a big part of the tag team titles being, like, the main events of shows, or have at least the best matches of shows. Like, it's kind of interesting to see just how important they are to NXT through and through. And they're not getting the conversation that Samoa Joe and Nakamura are, where people are saying, why are they in NXT at all? Or, like, people talk about Finn Balor, why is he even there? No one says that about DIY, but if you look at them, they're like the glue that holds these NXT shows together half the time.
Don't forget the Glorious Bombs, too.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the, you know, the social media thing and helping get Bobby Roode over. It's so true. And like, no one talks about just how important they are to NXT and how they're
they
like.
They really did help Roode get over. Sorry, that's a good point, Pete. Gosh, I forgot. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that's got it. Everyone, I mean, that's what got the song over. I mean, the song is pretty awesome. I mean, let's be honest. Sure. But what they guys did with it was just cool. Glorious. And but you're, that's a good point though, Timothy. You know, you don't hear them say, I mean, I know they're a much better tag team than Jordan Gable right now.
Yeah,
and they're on the main roster.
I feel like they're more important to the brand than, I mean, I hate to even say it, but like Nakamura, they've done more for the NXT developmental brand than Nakamura has. And really, like, brought more to the shows and been integral parts of storytelling and everything. I mean, their opening round match in the CWC took the tournament that in the first round was feeling like, oh, this is not great, and then made it feel like it was important and special, having the first match that really felt like it had story to it. So I just think, like, they're kind of getting overlooked for just how important they are to the developmental as a whole.
And that's not even to count the what they were. They're the workhorses on all the house shows. Like, I mean, I know I went to the San Antonio house show last year, and they had a 4.25-star match with the Revival live. I know, Timothy, you said they were the best live act you saw when you saw live. Now, Devin, have you seen NXT live?
I was at the UCF tapings last year. So I haven't. That's so. I mean, I have. It had the Balor Neville match that aired in like last March. It had like the build to Asuka Bayley and stuff like that on there. But, so I mean, I was at there were the tapings Rumble weekend last year. So, but gotcha. I haven't been to a house show.
Okay, yeah, but on the house shows, they're the ones who could consistently bring it out. They're the one who's consistently kicking ass and having the best match. I mean, it's them or the Revival if they're working different people. If they're working each other, that's definitely the best match. So. You know, Timothy, I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're hit something rather interesting there, and I'm curious if them dropping the tag belts is a way of them. Are they getting ready to go up to the main roster? Have they impressed the WWE brass enough to give them a shot now? I don't know. What do you think, Devin? I mean, it's all speculation.
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like NXT needs them longer. As far as if I think they will go to the main roster, I also kind of doubt that too. I feel like Revival should go to the main roster. I thought Revival were the best tag team in the world in 2016. I don't even think it was close.
I agree. Totally agree there too.
And I think they're kind of left with nothing to do, especially if with the they had that rumored TM61 feud that was supposed to happen, and then Shane Thorne got hurt. So. It'll be interesting to see what both those teams do going forward. And of course, you know, AOP are the tag champions, so you'd guess maybe they'll do AOP Revival and have Revival be tweeners in Orlando Mania.
You know,
Revival are like cool heels now. You know, they get cheered. So.
Yeah. And they're considered what, the B group, aren't they? Where supposedly they're not ready for the main roster and they're not putting the finishing touches on them, which I just find baffling to me because that to me they're the most polished act they have down there.
By far. they're like an '80s tag team with a modern twist.
Yeah.
It's it's like, why are they still down there? I just feel like if they've done everything that they can do, and I feel like the Revival is the one that really needs to move up more than any other team.
Agree, totally agree. What about you, Timothy?
Oh yeah, no, I think Revival's ready to go, and I don't even necessarily know if I think that DIY needs to go up to the main roster so much, but I just think it's interesting the way that they get overlooked for just how important they are. But maybe in some ways that's the point, is that they do a really good job of having these great matches that are making everybody else and the younger guys look so much better.
Yeah. And it might be that there might be the guys who are like kind of like their player coaches in a way, who they're going to want working with these young guys and younger guys who they think might have, like, they obviously think the Officers of Pain have money in the future. and not really, you know, it's kind of like the Tom McGee versus Bret Hart match from like 19 whatever that Bret Hart hides. But hey, let's get back to the show proper. And then we had the four-way a females match. Now, Timothy, what were you thinking here?
This was done really well, I thought, for the kind of like the narrative of the match, having Nikki and Asuka kind of get at each other a little bit, but every time they'd get cut off by the Aussies, and then they would kind of use the numbers that, advantage that they could working together. And I think they did a great job of when Asuka and Nikki were going at it, it would completely switch the tone, and it was just chaotic and violent. And when the Aussies would take over, it would become, you know, more normal a little bit, even though they were supposed to be pretty aggressive, and they even hit that big suplex off the table through the other table. And I did think it was kind of interesting as they're brawling around the building. I got flashes and memories of Attitude Era, you know, Rock versus Mick Foley matches, and I just thought this is another instance where the women's wrestling is very clearly aging through the eras that men's wrestling already has, because they're kind of doing stuff that's showing like for the shock value of doing it, suplex through the table on the announce table that way. It's not really something that they do in WWE men's wrestling anymore, but you know, it's still new and fresh for the women. They're even doing, you know, kind of on the main roster as well, working in, you know, some more like violent spots like that, just to show like, hey, they can do this too. So I thought that was interesting as well. And then, you know, so Nikki crosses out, and I did like Asuka being able to counter both girls as they tried to double team her and eventually putting them away. But I thought this match, as I said, was structured really well. Didn't kind of ruin the Nikki Cross versus Asuka match in any way. I thought that the Aussies looked, you know, good as a team, as a conniving team, you know, with their plots and their plans through. And I thought that, yeah, Asuka looked dominant at the end and sets up for probably the Ember Moon feud that I think we all expected where they were going. I ended up giving this 3 stars. I think there was some times where it lacked focus, but I think the overall narrative and structure of the match kind of made up for that.
Okay, fair enough. Well, what were you thinking here, Devin? Do you like it as much as Timothy?
I'd probably give it right around 3 stars too. I thought it was well booked. You know, multi-person matches like this, three-ways, fatal four-ways, are tough to do. And it's especially tough with some people that, you know, like, you know, the Aussies, for example, are people that are kind of the developmental side of WWE. So, you know, they're still improving. I think their act is really good, and I think they've gotten started to get really over with the crowd. I thought the highlight of this was that I think all four ladies got sort of protected. You know, by the end of the match, you know, the Aussies got to take out Nikki Cross and put her through a table, and Nikki Cross and Asuka got to have their showdown with some near falls, and Nikki Cross was the one who took out Asuka on the floor before she got taken out, and Peyton Royce got a big near fall off the Widow's Peak on Asuka, and at the end Asuka kind of withstood the other three and made her big comeback and won. So I think that as far as a booking and structure goes, I think that I'm with Timothy. I think they did a really good job of booking it and protecting all four ladies. So yeah, I thought it was a success. I didn't think it was great. I do think there were slow periods, especially the part, like, I think it kind of took a while to like get up the ramp and to the announce position. You know, there wasn't a lot going on there, and like there was like, and then, you know, Billy and Peyton had to walk back to get to Asuka. Like that kind of stuff can kind of, it's almost kind of like setting up tables and chairs in a plunder brawl. It's like, you know, it can be a little bit on the long side, but otherwise I thought it was a really well booked and structured match.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on the booking. I enjoyed the booking aspect of it because it did protect everybody. So no one really got hurt coming out of it. But as a match, I just found it just kind of not very engaging for me. I liked the opening beginning of it, but then after that, then it just felt like they were kind of leading to that table spot, and I was like, who cares? And then I even thought Nikki Cross when she went through it strong, but then she did something weird with her neck, like popped, looked up real quick, and then pretended she was dead. I don't know. Just there's something about it just came across as not genuine. But I did like how the Australian Mean Girls. I liked how they when they were coming back to the ring, they would hold their hands and stuff like that, where they're like kind of like you know half of the they're both like Siamese twins in a way, where they have this like weird connection. So I kind of like that, but as a match, it just didn't really work for me. I gave it 2.25. It wasn't bad or anything, but just was kind of there. And you know, there's got to be one match that has got to be the worst on the show, and I thought this was the worst match on the show. But Devin, man, talk about this main event. Nakamura, Rude, it's run the gauntlet from a whole lot of people thought it was boring to amazing. Where are your thoughts on this?
I'm going to a little backstory a little bit because I was worried about this match as far as the quality. I've been a pretty big I've pretty much been on Nakamura's case all year since the Sami Zayn match. I think he's done his sort of taken in his New Japan act over into the States and half-assed it and phoned it in about 80-90% of the time and tries one or two matches a year. And so I hated the Joe feud. I thought the matches stunk. So I was worried about the quality of the match.
And you blame the Joe feud on Nakamura's because he shit can all like Joe's legwork and stuff, for example, right?
Sure. Although I do think Joe's physically shot, and I think Joe's better off working sprints than long matches, in my opinion, at this point.
Fair enough.
I have a soft spot for Joe because I was watching him in 2004 and 2005, and he was amazing. So, it was just like, oh man, I'm not sure about this. I mean, I thought it was going to be a match that had, huge pops for the entrances, and then just kind of a boring match that went 20 minutes. But I was proven wrong. I thought this was amazing. I thought it dragged a little bit in the middle, but I have to give Nakamura credit for his huge apron bump that he took the first few minutes into the match, right on his head to the floor.
Yeah.
Got thrown around on the outside and took some really good bumps there. Things were slowed down and it was kind of reaching boring territory for about 3 or 4 minutes there. I won't lie, but things really picked up in the last 10 or 15 minutes. I really loved the psychology Rude used. I loved the spot where he laid down and acted like he was knocked out so he could avoid the Kinshasa. That was brilliant, brilliant heel work, brilliant veteran work by Rude. I loved the last several minutes with Nakamura making his big comeback. I love the strike exchange and then Nakamura like pulling out the stomps that he did in the Zayn match. I thought was a really great spot where he was just like basically shooting on Rude. I loved the Kinshasa to the floor and Nakamura hitting it in the ring and selling and the drama and the heat. I could tell just from watching, I felt like, and Pete, you can confirm this, it seemed like there was a ton of heat in the building for the last 5 minutes of that match.
Gonzos.
Nakamura kicking out of the DDT first time was amazing. And then Rude winning and the reaction afterwards was absolutely incredible. Corey Graves was phenomenal on commentary afterwards, just going nuts for Rude winning. It was... I had this as my number 6 match of the month. It was a really, really, really great match. And I thought it was a really impressive performance by Bobby Roode, who played the veteran heel and kind of outsmarting Nakamura. But also, even though Nakamura, Nak was also protected, you know, because his entry was a fluke. But I think Rude was made to look good because he withstood all the punishment that Nakamura threw at him. So I think it was a really well laid out match and really great performance from Rude, and you have to give credit for to Nakamura for finally selling the knee after all those Joe matches and that Arians match, and he finally sold the knee.
True.
So yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great.
I'll say two things. One, I love the finish because it also adds heat to Rude as a heel. If you don't, I like seeing the heel win with bull, kind of in a bullshit type of manner. And if they, I know the fans kind of respond to Rude as more of a babyface tweener type thing, but he's a heel, and so I kind of like how they're putting the heat in that way. And live, I thought at first I really thought it was a shoot that Nakamura hurt himself. That's how convincing his sell job live was. On tape, it didn't come across like that as much, but live, I was like, wow, he's hurt himself. I bought into it completely until Albert showed up. I was like, okay, this is a work. And I'm with you because well, where was this when Joe was working over his leg? It could have made the matches at least a lot more palatable.
I actually joked that Albert should have came in as should have interfered as Giant Bernard and attacked Nakamura so they could go back to their 08 feud.
There we go. What were your thoughts, Timothy, here on the match?
Yeah, I don't remember if they ever ended up having their big IWGP title match that they were supposed to have that everyone was pushing for. I think Brock got it instead of Bernard, right? That would have been great to go back to that. I thought that the match was great, especially because Rude, again, as you said, coming across like a heel, as Devin was talking about, a lot of little stuff throughout, playing possum to kind of get Nakamura in close so he could trick him, looking for the pin with the ropes, all that stuff. And what makes it even better is that he underhanded cheat like a dick the whole way through, but you could say that in the finish he didn't do anything dirty. And so he gets these... It plays up into the angle on the next episode of NXT, but the idea that he was more than willing to cheat, but in the end he won clean, so now people questioning his victory is going to piss him off even more. It's such a great little wrinkle to like the narrative of the heel story, because it's like, yeah, well, you did cheat. I mean, sure, you weren't cheating when you won, but he's going to continue to play it off like, no, I won clean. I won completely clean. I kicked his ass. I deserve the title. And it's just kind of a great way to put the story together. They did a fantastic job here. I think New Japan, a lot of times, the finishers, especially the Kinshasa or the Bamaye, would get spammed and kicked out of a bunch just to use it. They did a great job here where the kickouts of the Kinshasa were ones where it was not complete. When he got the first real big one with the kickout, it didn't come across like a real full-force Kinshasa. And so I thought that was good there. And then there was the diving, and he doesn't get to the pin for the kickout. So I thought that was great there as well. I loved Rude gets the Canadian maple leaf, and he's punching at the knee. Then from there, and Nakamura won't give it up. And as you talked about, I mean, Nakamura still is in some ways protected because it's a fluke on the knee, and he didn't give up when he was, you know, in this excruciating hold with him working over the knee. He actually valiantly fights and gets to the ropes and even counters into a triangle. And it kind of shows that valiant strength and stuff from Nakamura. My biggest problem with the match, and it's more my own fault, and it does come back to what you said, though, is that because of my expectations in Nakamura was going to shit can the selling of the knee halfway through, I wasn't able to buy into it and get into the match as much as I would have. And that's just because I've come to expect that from him. So it took down my ability to really get into the match and believe in the selling. So that, you know, again, took down my enjoyment of the match in general. I guess this is what you have to do, is just tell Nakamura that he's going to take a couple weeks off afterwards and that you're doing an angle on the knee work. And then that's the only way to get him to actually sell it or something. I don't know if that's the deal with Nakamura, but it seemed to work here. So I think they need to tell him every time that he's going to take some episodes off for an injury angle so he'll actually sell. I give it 3.5 stars. I really, like I said, good stuff and surprisingly great the way they did it, but it was hard for me to invest emotionally because I expected to have it end up that he's just going to shit can the knee selling and win with the Kinshasa. And I, because of that, it again, as I said, it muted my enjoyment of the match.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I gave it 3 3/4 stars, but I'm with Devin in the middle part. It got kind of like slow, like what's going on, and then they hit their final gear when they go into the finish. And I'm really liking Rude. I like Rude because he's such a I want to say he's kind of like a mechanic throwback 80s style worker where, you know, he was working the arm and the neck and the leg. I mean, everything he does is technically sound, and it's engaging. He does things in interesting ways. Some people call him bland, but I just think it's just a different style of working nowadays than what a lot of people are used to from the guys who work on top. He doesn't have a whole lot of sizzle besides that entrance music and theme. But I thought he did a really good job in this, and I thought he was kind of the glue. Because I thought Nakamura gave enough sizzle for both guys to where they had a really compelling match, and I'm glad to see Rude on top. I think it gives us. I'm a big proponent of having your champion. I like the heel champion dynamic a lot, and I'm gonna be interested in how he handles it, and not in a. And let's see how what he does. I'm curious, even when Joe was on top, and yeah, his matches weren't very good. I was a huge fan of Joe's character work, where I loved his promos, I loved his intensity, I loved how he got the angles over with Nakamura and Finn Balor. I thought he carried TV segments, and I'm kind of curious to see if Bobby Roode. Is going to be able to carry these segments like Joe did as champion, and which back in the day that meant a lot, and I hope, if I'm not mistaken, I think Rude will do a really good job of carrying these type of segments. Now, Devin, thumbs up or thumbs down show?
Thumbs up for sure. I said it was the third best takeover ever, and I probably still stand by that. And you know, part of that might be because it exceeded expectations, but I think that's a good thing. And to me, like with a card like this, and you're able to exceed expectations, that just puts more points on it for me. I think it's only behind Takeover Dallas and the first Brooklyn, as far as the best takeover. So.
I can buy into that because, you know, a lot of people, they kind of have the rose-colored glasses in a way where they remember the first few matches. Like, you know, you remember the epic Sami Zayn matches early, and they were epic. But some of the undercard was kind of lacking where you only got 5 or 6 minutes to showcase. Now the shows are a little longer, and the matches are getting a little bit more time, and we're actually getting to see a more consistent – I felt like this was a really – top to bottom, more consistent card than we usually get from the takeover specials. Because usually there's a couple more, a couple misses where either the matches didn't have time to develop or it just wasn't all that compelling. And here I thought it was top to bottom. I give it an easy thumbs up. What about you, Timothy?
Oh yeah, it's a thumbs up. There's no question. And a big part of it is it exceeded expectations. I think going in there was a lot missing, but I think that they definitely knew that they needed to deliver, and they solidly did. I definitely enjoyed it quite a bit.
Now, what was your favorite match, Timothy?
On this show was, probably the Authors of Pain and DIY was probably my favorite match.
Okay. What was yours, Devin?
DIY AOP. Yeah, same.
Okay. I'm going to be the outlander, and I liked Roddy and Cien Almas the best, but I can totally understand why you thought the tag team match was the best, because it was a hell of a match. That's it, man. Devin, you got anything you got to plug?
Yeah, my wrestlingvirtues.blogspot.com, blog will be posted for January 2017 WWE matches on Sunday evening. Quick thing, I don't add in house show matches in the rankings anymore. I will add them as recommendations because looking for every house show match is a pain in the ass, and so I'm more selective this year. Because you see the same matches over and over and over again, there'll be house show recommendations, but they will not be in the rankings. The rankings are just from TV network and pay-per-view matches. But yeah, that'll be out Sunday evening for my January rankings. And you can follow me at KingMotivatorH on Twitter.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on board and talking NXT TakeOver. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back, and man, we're going to talk a little bit about CWF Mid-Atlantic, we're going to talk Ring of Honor TV, we're going to talk the NXT TV show, again, thanks for Devin for talking NXT TakeOver. I was a shitty host, and I forgot to bring up the Triple H Rollins angle, so it's on me, so sorry everybody if you're dying to hear our takes on that. But man, I was down for the Rumble weekend, and I went to both the Evolve shows, and you saw the first one live. Did it come across as a train wreck with all the rings breaking and stuff on TV, or did it come off all right?
Well, I watched it a little bit disjointed because I really wanted to see Hero Keith Lee, and I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to watch everything.
Right.
So I watched that first and then went back through. But yeah, kind of. It was definitely kind of a sign that Evolve tries to run these weekends in line with the, you know, with the WWE big pay-per-views. But when they get out of their comfort zone, man, I mean, you know, I don't know if it was cutting corners or not, but going with the TWA rings, obviously, that were an issue. And I don't know if they scouted out the buildings really well before they showed up. But the building, I mean, I'm not trying to say anything too bad about it, but the building definitely didn't look like they had the chance to really give it a feeling to where it would stand out. Like LaBoom, right? When Evolve runs LaBoom, you can tell that it's Evolve. They put a lot into it. They got a lot of cool stuff going on, and it has its own thing. This, I mean, unfortunately, looked like one of any indie shows that just happens to be in a big, non-discriminate kind of warehouse, maybe gym-type room. So it did come across a little bit, let's say, not fully polished.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Live, where the seats I was sitting in, they were actually seats that you put, you know, like the normal folding chair seats, right? But the general admission seats, they were built in. They were already in line, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. They were, like, part of the building?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
but they weren't, like, bleachers.
No, they weren't bleachers, but they kind of were bleachers in a way. I know it's hard to explain, but they weren't, like, it was kind of like movie chairs in a way, except not nice, with no padding. You know what I'm saying? There were chairs next to each other, but bolted into the floors.
Okay, yeah. That's interesting.
So they're kind of like bleachers, but they're chairs.
Okay, so it was more like, yeah, like you said, like the chairs you would see at the theater.
Yeah, but just fold out, kind of like a stadium in a way, with seats, but just no padding in the chairs and stuff. Just an old school gymnasium, it looked like. It was called the Woodlawn Lawn Gymnasium. So it was kind of interesting, but there was definitely the basketball hoop there, and it was on a hardwood floor. So I'm guessing it was kind of like the local YMCA type of thing, but where they probably sold tickets for like high school basketball or something in that, where they probably run normally there type of thing.
Right, right.
What how did that affect your Keith Lee Chris Hero enjoyment? Because I think I even liked it more than their Beyond match because of how different it was.
I mean, I still gave it 4 stars, and yeah, I loved the match. I thought both guys did great. I think that Keith Lee just looked about as good as he's ever looked. I think I agree with you that I think I enjoyed this better than the Beyond match. I thought Hero, there's something to Hero when there's that real emotion that you know is flowing. That I think he works well under pressure.
Called. I bet you he called 95% of that match. You know.
Oh yeah, and yeah, I thought that they did a really good job. I mean, I don't think the rope snapping for me affected the match at all.
I thought it actually added to it. Added to the chaos and the and made it stand out more, and it's kind of in an odd way, kind of a cool going away home present if he didn't almost kill himself. Take that with a grain of salt. But I really liked it. I thought they had a hard hitting, action packed match, which it looked like they were totally going for a different vibe early. Because it looked like they were going to be exchanging headlocks and building into a big, high impact type match. But we never got there because the rope broke and they had to call it on the fly. And they ended up having a pretty damn exciting match and seeing some of the stuff Hero was doing, like the swan, like the dive, what do you call that? The back senton to the floor. It's just nuts for him to be doing that and stuff. But, I thought it was a hard hitting and ended up being a really exciting match and stuff. So, what did you watch the ACH Riddle match?
Yeah, I loved that. I gave it 3 3/4. I thought that they did a really good job of meshing their styles. And this is where I'm starting to really. I mean, so far every match that I've seen Riddle have, I've put at about 3 3/4 to 4-star range. So, I mean. I think after last year, I thought Riddle was really good. I think this year he's just even getting better. I thought ACH was very serious here. No goofy selling, just a lot of high octane offense. Not a lot of crazy flips and dives, but he hit his spot. So I really enjoyed it. I honestly thought coming out of it that that match got overshadowed in a way where I didn't hear anyone talking about it as much as they should have based on how good I thought it was.
Yeah, my one complaint was I didn't think Bro should have let ACH ride him a little bit, just because that's, Bro's bread and butter is owning the mat. So I felt he kind of, sometimes like Kurt Angle would do it every now and then, kind of prostitute himself a little bit to get the match over when in reality, Riddle should be guzzling should be guzzling 95% of the guys on the mat. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, I agree with you on that, and in that regard, and I think we'll see how it goes, because that was my biggest I would say kind of negative on Riddle in 2016 was just that I didn't think that I saw him be able to have a match where he really solidly put somebody else over, and a match that wasn't just really about himself.
Yeah.
He can put something together, because it is also important, it's not just about putting someone else over, but as you said, to also protect the important parts of himself. So we'll see if he can put that together, because I think that that's honestly a key piece of his in-ring game that's missing. Is I don't see a solid Matt Riddle having a match that's not super selfish and one like really more about himself, and also again still protecting his aura. So we'll see if he'll be able to pull that off throughout 2017.
Yeah, I talked to him for a bit that weekend, and he has a really interesting take on match psychology and stuff, and about false finishes, which I think it's just going to take a learning curve for some people and stuff. Because we explained a little bit about the Shibata finish to me, about how most I loved the finish, and I think you liked it a lot too, didn't you?
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, I loved that match. But,
yeah, and I think some people had a problem with it because they didn't have enough falsies at the end, and that's what he's trying to get at, that he doesn't want everyone, he doesn't want to pop the crowd just with false finishes. He wants his finishes to be definite. It had to be defining moments, and for people to buy into the drama through that, and that's just going to be a learning curve, because now people have been taught so much that I've had people tell me that they can't get into a match without hot tooth fouls down the stretch, and you know what? That's just scary to me. That means all you care about is the fireworks, or you know, the sizzle, not the steak part. And I think Matt understands. He's gotten the steak down, and he's just trying to toy with people's different emotions, and I think he's really understanding the wrestling psychology of it, and like I think he's just gotta learn a little bit, like the ACH, and not prostitute his mat work, his jiu-jitsu to ACH. You know, yeah, let ACH outshine you at flying, because that's what he does, or I can even let him out quick me and stuff, but there's no way ACH should have been riding him and stuff in a match. It should never happen, because Matt Riddle is gimmick is not only a gimmick, it's real life. He was a UFC star, and he excelled at wrestling and jiu-jitsu, was his two forms of discipline. What about the one match that I thought really impressed me? Was Zack Sabre Jr. and Ethan Page. I thought they had a pretty good violent match, and I thought this is the match that Sabre Jr. should have worked with Marty Skrull on at Rev Pro.
Well, I can't argue with you on the second part. So you're not the first person. Yeah, you're not the first person who's told me that they really liked this match. I didn't hate it. I give it 3.5 stars, but
yeah,
I didn't
that's where
see
I had
it.
That's where I had is 3 okay. and a half. Yeah. Well, I going in, I thought this is going to be just a junker, but I thought what they did with the steps, and I thought Paige did a really good job working over Sabre Jr.'s back, and I like that narrative. But I liked Sabre Jr. just his violence in the whole entire match, and taking it to him really set the tone of the match right off the bat.
The focus from Sabre was great. Killer Instinct. I think I've always been, I think, slightly higher on Paige than most people, but I know his limitations, and I like him for what he is. I don't think, you know, he's not necessarily a great worker, but he was good here. He showed some focus. But, you know, he's all about his personality and his character, and it really depends on what you think of him. It's funny for me, because I am a fan of his, but I also don't think that he's a super talker or a great personality, or even has, like, a fuck ton of charisma like a lot of other people seem to think. So I just think it's kind of interesting in that regard that that I still kind of seem to like him more than most people. But yeah, I thought that they told a great narrative here. And as you said, the story and the way that they went about it made a lot more sense. And it would have made even more sense to have this in the Skrull match or something. Cause I mean, you know, the Skrull Sabre match at high stakes really kind of shit the bed when it came to emotion and storytelling. And this match had a lot more to it, and something that hasn't been built up for a year. I mean, they've been building this up for a while, but
yeah,
just goes to show like, which companies the narrative is being driven more and is treated like it's more important, and other companies where it's not so much, you know? So it was definitely interesting in that. So yeah, I've heard other people trying to say that they actually liked that match more than the ACH Riddle match. And for me, I thought that the ACH Riddle match was a hair better, a quarter star better. So I thought maybe you were saying a similar thing.
Yeah, no, I also enjoyed the tag match, the Cobb Thatcher versus Yehi and Williams match. I enjoyed that one too. I thought that was really well done. What were your thoughts there?
Yeah, I thought that match was great, and I thought that Thatcher really I mean, he's coming into his own for this heel character with Stokely Hathaway here, and it just, I mean, he's shining so well, I think, showing a lot of depth to character and personality that you wouldn't expect. I thought it was really interesting. You could just tell Thatcher was in some ways kind of intentionally using Cobb here in this match. He wanted to win the match, but maybe he was also thinking about letting Cobb work as much as he could to get kind of worn down for their match the next day. Catch Point looked great, especially Fred Yehi, and I think seeing Fred Yehi obviously being groomed for big stuff, I mean, and Evolve, stuff like tapping out the champion doesn't just happen willy-nilly, so it's definitely they're gonna start pushing him somewhere, because I can't imagine he's keeping that FIP title for much longer, just because of the way that they're kind of switching the formats over there, which I mean, would still be interesting. I mean, the match with Teddy Stigma I found very interesting, showing Freddie Yehi mixing it up in kind of a hardcore setting. I kind of like it, but I don't think that's necessarily a long-term thing you're going to do. So I think that Yehi might start getting pushed up the card here and Evolve as a top-level guy. And I think it's well-deserving, and I think he really showed it here. And I think Cobb is really impressive, the way that he's come into Evolve and is instantly treated like a big fucking deal. And with his history with Thatcher from, you know, training together and everything, it does make a lot of sense that with Thatcher being so consecrated in the company that you can kind of cash in on that, and instantly their interactions with each other makes him a top level guy too. And I thought Cobb looked great here. I think everybody looked fantastic in this match and in different ways. One interesting thing is that I was really high on Tracy Williams last year, and so far, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of him, but so far what I've seen in 2017, he's not really showing me anything yet. So I'm hoping pretty soon here he kind of steps it up and starts working again. It feels like since his rivalry with Riddle, he hasn't done much.
Yeah, on the two nights there, he was like one of the least impressive guys watching live of that, you know. He didn't stand out charismatically at all. Like Yehi, have you ever seen Yehi work live?
I have not, and that's something I really would hope to soon.
I mean, I saw Mania Weekend, but I didn't have as good of seats as I had here, and I was blown away by his charisma and his style, stylistically, his work, and how he connected to the crowd. He's definitely the real deal, and someone to keep a definite eye on. Has he ever worked? Do you know if he's ever worked Donovan Dijak?
Not that I can remember off the top of my head, but I feel like it has happened.
For some reason, I think that'd be a really interesting matchup. And I'm hoping I'll put a bug in Russell Circus's ear. Maybe get Fred out there with the booking against Dijak, because I think that'd be a really interesting match. Not that I have any pull with Russell Circus, but
right.
I can't hurt to ask. But yeah, I was really blown away by Fred's charisma and the way he connected to the crowd. He was honestly live. I mean, obviously, Hero stood out. But I thought, I might have been my second favorite guy of the week. Him and Riddle battling it out. Both of them charismatically different, but similar. But they both had connections to the crowd. Of course, Bro is really over. And he had totally two different style matches. But Yehi, man, he was just a guy who just really got over. I think he got over great with the live crowd, and I think he's money. I mean, the only downside to him is the size. 5 foot, I think he's what, 5'8" maybe, 5'9". But other than that, man, that guy's a stud. Charismatically, good look, charisma, and can work. I mean, you can't ask for much more than that. And I really enjoyed his match with ACH night two. Did you happen to see the Cobb Thatcher match from night two?
I did not.
Yeah, people are shitting on it, and I absolutely love that match.
Well, I can almost guarantee you that I'll love it as well, because I've seen them have great matches with each other before, and I always seem to be the one that likes it when other people don't, so I'll probably be in that camp with you, but I can't say for sure until I watch it, which was my plan this weekend. As I was telling you, I don't know if I said it on air or if it was off air, but I had a busy weekend last weekend when all this was going on, so I barely got to watch the Rumble, let alone this, and I just haven't gotten around to it yet. But yeah, I think that's a guy I really like. On the night one more thing I just wanted to say was Dustin and Kincaid. I mean, I don't know. What did you think? Because I thought Kincaid really looked fantastic here, and I thought that Chuck Taylor, you know, Dustin, is just really soaking up the heel heat in Evolve. Not, you know, I wouldn't put it as a great match in ring-wise, but I gave it 3-star. I thought that they did a really good job.
Okay, I thought Dustin was a good heel as a character. I'm just not buying in. I'm not getting engaged, though, in his matches. I did not get engaged in the Kincaid match. I loved Kincaid in the match. I just thought Dustin, he understands how to piss the crowd off, but now he needs to also engage the crowd, make it interesting, do stuff in the matches that are interesting. That makes sense?
Okay. Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. I can definitely see that. I think his character work has been super solid, and his in-ring has been, I mean, I wouldn't call him a bad worker, but I would definitely say that he's not at the level that a lot of the other guys in Evolve are. So it's kind of, he does kind of stand out in that regard when it comes to work.
And the other thing I thought he needed to work on was he was getting booed and heckled by a lot of people. He needs to bask in that a little bit more, as in egg it on or engage it. Like Ethan Page eggs it on, you know? He engages it and brings it into his matches. Now, I think Dustin needs to do the same thing because he feels like he's working in a vacuum in a way. Sometimes he works with the crowd, but he's a guy who really should be focusing more on, as a heel, really getting heat and trying to piss that crowd off. And they naturally don't like him, but it's all because of the booking. It's not because of his engagement with the crowd, if that's fair.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And I almost think that there's some, like, it's intentional in some ways. That's the point of his character right now. Because he was so known for so long of being the guy who interacted with the crowd, that he's probably trying to divorce himself from that character as much as possible to kind of, like, solidify himself as a heel. Okay. And then we'll see if maybe once he feels comfortable, if he steps out of that. And, you know, this is obviously all just me kind of pulling it out of my ass, but it's what I would think. And then maybe once he's comfortable in his heeldom, he can go back to interacting with the crowd as a heel and not worry about it turning into kind of jokey comedy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I gotcha. Now, let's move away from Evolve and let's talk about one of our boys, Sammy Guevara. It looks like he got a WWE tryout either today or yesterday. Have you heard anything about it or just what just seen some pictures of him at the Performance Center?
Yeah, just that he's there, and then he seems to be very happy about the situation. I had also heard a lot of, while maybe some people didn't think his match with Desmond Xavier in Style Battle was great, that there was a lot of conversation that he was going to be working more in the WWN world, yep, depending on what that means. Some Evolve possibly here and there, definitely some FIP level stuff. So definitely heard some grumblings that there was some stuff going on. So we'll see if he kind of skips over all that and gets signed up, or maybe he ends up one of these guys where they're keeping an eye on you from a not so distant far, as, you know, I mean, WWN is so goddamn close to the Performance Center. I can't imagine, you know, with them running in Florida so often, I can't imagine that they're not checking out these shows pretty much every time.
Yeah. No, yeah, I'm happy for him. So, I mean, he was a guy we both speculated 2017 was going to be a huge year. He's main eventing against Ricochet, Wrestle Circus. Are you going to buy that pay-per-view?
Depending on if I'm able to. I don't know the date and the times. It's kind of the problem
Sunday
with being
night,
West Coast.
Sunday night, okay, I know that. Sunday. Yeah, that's all I can I know that. I just can't remember.
All right, if it's a Sunday night, then yeah, I'll probably be getting it. You know, being on the West Coast, sometimes it's tough for me to catch stuff live, so it's easier for me to just go the next day and watch it.
Yes, yeah, the
day VOD.
After it's the day after Evolve, so yeah, I know that.
All right, well, yeah, then I think I will definitely be checking that one out, and I don't know if they've even announced who's doing the iPay-per-view. Have they?
It's on his Twitter, and it's them. It's his own. It's a Wrestle Circus website.
Okay, so they're just going to do it themselves. All right,
yeah.
Hey, you know,
kinda
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of curious on what type of hiccups there will be. You don't hear many of them streaming their own shows, do you?
No, I mean, Freelance kind of does it. They were on YouTube, but now I think they do their own thing. And I mean, that's really it right now that I can think of who does their own through their own website. We'll see how it goes. I'm always kind of trepidatious about that when it's not a proven, you know, streaming service. And there is also the conversation about, is it smart to be doing your own a la carte thing in 2017 when there's services that are a lot more enticing? But I'll definitely give them a shot. I mean, it is also, it does kind of suck for me that I would love to get a chance to watch their back catalog before I jump into the iPay-per-view, but right. You know, it is what it is.
Yep. All right, man. Let's get on to the reviews. Let's first start off with CWF Mid-Atlantic. How's about that, my friend?
Let's do it.
All right. It opens up with a CL Party dance party to start the show with Percy Davis. That was pretty funny, you gotta admit, right? A fun way to start the show.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, Percy Davis has got a lot of personality.
Yeah, I think I can hang. I'm a pretty good dancer. What about you?
I'm not a great dancer, I don't think. I don't really like to dance, honestly.
Okay. You sound like my brother before his accident. He'd always, at weddings, he'd be standing near a door. So if someone would ever come up to try to get him to dance, he could exit stage left or right immediately and stuff. I thought it was like the nutsest thing I've ever, most paranoid thing I've ever seen in my life. But that leads us to Percy Davis versus Donnie Dollar. So what were your thoughts about this?
Percy's got a lot of personality, but, you know, he's not, I don't think he's a great wrestler. Donnie, this is all about putting over Donnie as this kind of new Stone Cold Killer character that he's doing, which I think he does really well. He's kind of emotionless, icy, with big power moves and just kind of taking it to Percy. He gets a pretty quick win with a big boot, and I like that he really, again, he sticks with it. He doesn't really show a lot of emotions or any kind of connection. He's just out here to kick ass and do his business. I gave this 2.5 stars for the match itself.
Yeah, I thought it was solid. I didn't really have a star rating for it. I couldn't get a real feel for it. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was just pretty short, you know. But I enjoyed the Mitch Connor angle when he calls out Donnie Dollars and setting up that match. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I love it. It just reminds me of the old gunslinger kind of mentality where he says, you don't owe me an explanation, but you do owe me a fight. And I just think that that's such a great line. And I mean, God, I know WWE tries to get away from that stuff, but I mean, they script some of the cheesiest sounding lines. And then something like this, they would probably say sounds too scripted or too fake and too much like from an old cowboy Western movie. But for me, it works. And I just think it's great.
I'm with you completely. I loved it. So there we go. And then we got a Smith-Garrett interview, and Garrett wants a fight. I enjoyed this. It kind of sets up what, you know, he wants revenge because Cyrus screwed him over for the TV title. And this feud is, he wants a fight. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was great. I think Smith came across super fiery. He's ready to do this.
Yep, and then we got the match of Cyrus versus Smith Garrett. Any thoughts here?
I liked the callback with the stage attack, just like Cyrus did to him. I think that Smith is just fired up, and he's throwing these murderous big punches on the floor, and Cyrus just kind of books it and says he's not even going to deal with this. You know what I mean? If you count this as a match, I don't know if it's like even 2 stars just because there was nothing to it.
Right.
But for an angle and for an overall everything it was, this was a 3-star angle. You know what I mean? The students coming out and Smith is kicking their ass, and I just thought this was fantastic stuff.
Yep, this is what I call a nice piece of business, and that's exactly what it is. It's that stuff that you might not mean anything now, but it's part one, or this is actually part two of their angle. It's just a continuation, and I love these type of things. In a personal hate feud, this is exactly what you kind of need, you know. I liked it, and Cyrus comes across as still a chicken shit by taking the powder. I liked the brawl and the callback to the angle to Battlecade was great. I mean, good stuff. And then we got Trip Cassidy, and he's wearing a Papa Hale shirt, so that's strike one as a heel, okay? I mean, I know Papa's a popular guy, but you're a heel, my friend. Papa's a babyface. But I love the promo. thought it was very effective. So he got his heel heat back for me immediately. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I liked the promo a lot. I don't know. I guess I have to agree with you. Papa is a natural babyface, so I don't know what shirt he should be wearing to kind of get the heel heat, but I guess Papa's not the one. But I mean, at the same time, I think that there's probably a certain group of people, the same people who religiously espouse that Roman Reigns is being shoved down our throats, might not even know who Papa Hales is, but see a shirt like that and think of it as that's just a smarky elitist shirt that right. he's wearing. So either way, I thought the promo was great.
For sure. And then it leads us to a fun match, which I thought the commentary nailed it on the head. I really dug how the psychology of the match, you know, where Trip Cassidy is the one angel on Nick Richards' shoulder trying to bring him to the dark side, you know, come on, punch me, trying to get him into a brawl, trying to bring Nick Richards back to the old Nick Richards, not the current Nick Richards, and the payoff of Nick Richards taking the winning via count out for the win, showing the maturity of Nick Richards. I really felt this was kind of like, you know, Trip Cassidy kind of reminds me of Raven, except he's good. Because I'm not a big Raven guy, but Trip Cassidy reminds me, this is something kind of like a match that Raven would try to pull off, but just couldn't. But Cassidy and Richards were able to pull it off here. And just the whole psychology thing was really deep, and Richards fighting the temptation to revert back to the brawler that he was. Just good story. You know what? Good story. I gave it 3 stars. Really, I mean, it wasn't like this action-packed, high spot, something that you might not interest everyone, but to a fan of wrestling, and if you like really storytelling, I thought this was a masterclass in storytelling. What were your thoughts here?
I agree with all your points. I don't know if now is the time to debate about Raven or not, especially because I don't think he's good enough to warrant me sticking up for him. But I could definitely see the similarities there between Trip Cassidy and Raven. I loved Trip Cassidy kind of every time that Nick Richards could get going, he'd cut him off with the nasty-looking strikes. There was especially one elbow that looked really fucking good. And it does call back to that again that every time Richards is trying to have a wrestling match, Trip Cassidy's taking him back to the barroom brawl. And so, you know, from there, I think a lot of really good stuff. And then finally, it seems like Richards is ready to go for the fight, and he's just going to kind of give up the ghost in fighting, or not fighting, but in trying to keep this as a technical wrestling bout. And Trip Cassidy again cuts him off with the hell stab, and then I was just like, oh man, like he gave in and he's gonna get his ass kicked. And then he flipped that switch for a second, because I like that he didn't just get the count out, but he got the count out off of throwing a butterfly suplex onto the concrete floor. I mean, that's vicious. That is like, that is your textbook asshole brawler type kind of move. And so he did that to then set up that he snaps back to reality and he goes, oh yeah, like I'm going to win this wrestling match. He goes in the ring, gets the win on the count out instead of continuing on taking, you know, the brawling low road. And yeah, as you said, storyline stuff, well-worked match, both guys phenomenal in keeping with their character. I gave this one 3 stars. I really enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah. And I liked earlier in the match, I'm not even sure it was this match, but one of them, where old Stutzy gave our boy Johnny P a nice shout out for the video package he did on the Brad Attitude Trevor Lee feud.
Oh yeah, he did, and I thought that was really cool, and I liked that video a lot myself.
Yep, so check it out. And speaking of videos, man, the 2006 Images, what a great, great video package. I thought the song was perfect. I thought everything about it was just darn perfect. What about you, man? I tugged on your emotions, and I mean, then they'd do a voiceover, like a play-by-play by Stutzy or C-Bear, and it was just, and it added to it. Everything meant something, and it was just a really cool moment and stuff. I just wow. Let me just say it. Wow. Okay, I'm sorry. Go on.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. I think done so well and brings back kind of instant nostalgia for the stuff that just happened this past year. And then also makes everything feel really important. It's like, geez, like they've come so far, even just from the beginning of 2016 to the beginning of 2017. And it just shows how much character development they've done in a year. I mean, I hate to harp on it, but look at AJ Styles in the WWE. Yes, he's having great matches and he's been the champ, or he was the champ for a very long time. But I mean, you look at AJ Styles shows up at the Rumble in 2016, and then you show, you know, AJ Styles Rumble match against John Cena 2017, and it doesn't feel like a lot has changed. And then meanwhile, you look at the beginning of the year 2016 Trevor Lee compared to the end of the year champion Trevor Lee, and he feels like a totally different wrestler. And I just think it's really cool to kind of encapsulate that in this quick video.
For sure, for sure. Well, that was another good, fun episode of CWF Mid-Atlantic. I'm really looking forward, mostly I'm looking forward to the Cyrus Smith-Garrett, where this is heading. I think they could have some really fun stipulation matches, some fun brawls. I'm looking forward to where that story goes. That was the thing I got the most out of this episode. Also interested in Donnie Dollars and Mitch Connor too. So and the evolution of Nick Richards. So a lot of good pieces of storytelling going forward. And it was cool to see Trip Cassidy back in the fold. What about you, man? What were your most big takeaways from the show?
Yeah, loved the show. Excited to see more Trip Cassidy. The Nick Richards story is just getting going, and it's nice and exciting. But yeah, Donnie Dollars and Connor, that's cool.
Sorry, let me interrupt. And I liked how they teased, yeah. When are you going to cash in? When are you cashing in? You know, is the ticket?
Yep.
Is shot.
And I love that he just says, I don't know, soon maybe. I think I'm getting there. I love that he doesn't give it away, and there's still that what's going on thing. But I mean, all that said, I think the biggest thing is right now, off of this episode, Smith Garrett and Cyrus feels like big deal. Really, like, I want to see these two lock it up, especially now with what happened on this episode.
Yep, as Bill Watts say, let's get it on! I second it completely, man. But hey, let's move over to Ring of Honor television. It opens up with an Adam Cole promo. You know, talking about his victory. They don't really mention Kyle O'Reilly by name, but they show him. But I thought it was effective piece and got us back to the status quo. But hey, before we start on that, Kevin Kelly leaving leaving the office of Ring of Honor. What type of impact could this have on the company? Because he was the liaison between the office and the talent. That's taking him out of the equation. Can't be a good thing, can it?
Especially so quickly. It felt like he just started to have this position and now it's gone. And
yeah,
there's a lot of turmoil backstage, and I think you know, with the rumors about what happened with the aforementioned lack of mentioned Kyle O'Reilly, it feels like maybe Kevin Kelly was in a situation where the company was maybe telling him he needed to take a loss on something, say, hey, you're the liaison between talent and ROH. You need to smooth over this whole kind of no-compete thing, that clause that's in their contracts that they didn't really think about us forcing. And I think maybe Kevin Kelly said, you guys don't pay me enough for this shit, you know? And he just kind of said, I'm not gonna do that. I'm not going to go along with – because, I mean, Kevin Kelly has always been pretty open and honest about the fact that what he likes about ROH – is that it is an unofficial developmental brand, and he's talked about how much he likes working with younger guys and helping them build. And I don't think he likes the idea of telling them, hey, you know, I now work for a company that's going to make it harder for you to achieve your dreams and your goals. And so I think that might be a big part of this. There's a lot of talk that he's going to be still doing work with New Japan, yep. Still doing work with ROH here and there. So we'll see how it goes. I think it'd be very interesting if New Japan really is planning on global expansion, if we don't see Kevin Kelly ending up being a big part of New Japan USA.
Yeah, because I've talked to him here and there, like, you know, at shows just for a minute or two, but he comes across as a really nice guy, and I'm sure when he's trying to do business, he's pretty He's been around, and I think he knows the landscape, and I bet he knows where he really wanted to end up, and I think you make a really good point about he was always the guy who wanted to handpick young talent and develop them. He always talks about how when he was in WWE, he said that they should have signed AJ Styles for developmental, that he was a blue chipper, and he always tells that story. And I think he probably sees a lot of these guys who he feels they could be bigger stars. And that's a good point, Timothy. I never even thought about it, but it's very interesting because he had it. I mean, what has it been? What, 3 months, 4 months? He's had this position.
Yeah, in that range. I mean, it hasn't been long at all. And
yeah,
I mean, we were just talking about how the TV was just starting to kind of show the influences of his fingerprints, and now he's already done.
Yep. Yeah, it's just a weird thing. But okay, Cole promo, what do you think of it?
I thought it was good. Cole is a great promo. I thought it was interesting, as you said, that they didn't really want to talk about ROH. And it's kind of, or not ROH, Kyle O'Reilly. And it is kind of hard to get into promos like this where it's kind of a wink and a nod to weird backstage stuff that they're not openly talking about.
Yep, really. It's like not wanting to air their dirty laundry in a way. Then we got this tag match with the Tempura Boys versus Cheeseburger and Ferrara against, I forgot who the last group was. Do you happen to catch their name?
Coast to Coast. It's Leon St. Giovanni and Shaheen Ali.
Okay, and both guys have worked in their prospect tournaments before, top prospects tournaments. I enjoyed this. I thought it was a really fun opener, had fun spots, you know, just mindless fun wrestling. What about you?
Yeah, great spot festy stuff. Coast to Coast looked really good hitting what they got, or like their kind of their namesake moves. Tempura Boys are looking good. I think the Tempura Boys having, well, they're called the Tempura Boys, which is already pretty bad, but them having a move that's called Shock and Awe feels a little like, I don't know. But, you know, whatever. It is what it is. It's ROH. I don't know this for sure, but it feels kind of Chris Daniels. Feels like his sense of humor in some ways. The Bucks come out, they go on commentary and say that this is what ROH used to like to call, what was it, on the spot title shot kind of things that they do on the TV tapings, where they to the crowd live, they tell them that these guys are wrestling to get a title shot.
Yeah, it's like a later test on of honor show. Or something like that. I forget what the hell they called it. I don't even know what the hell they called it. Yeah.
Yeah, but at the TV tapings, they always like to run them and tell you that they're doing it tonight. But then when they edit it for TV, they turn it into they get the match down the line on the TV shows in a couple weeks. So that's what this was. But yeah, like you said, fun match.
Yeah, and they had the Bucks come out and Cole's there and they do the super kick. Whatever. Skrull versus Juice Robinson. Again, I thought this was another fun bout. I thought Juice looked really good here. I thought these guys had actually a pretty good chemistry, and I could buy into them feuding down the line because I enjoyed this match a lot. What about you?
Yeah, I thought, again, pretty good stuff. Skrull plays up the big chicken wing spot in the middle that sets up him getting cut off, which I like that it kind of, you know, instead of shouting out chicken wing six or seven times in the match, he does it one time really big and makes it into a whole thing. So I can get behind that a little bit more. He's pretty focused. I thought Juice looked good with him. I think that like the tombstone with the cross arm thing was a little, or it wasn't a tombstone, it was a regular pile driver, but with the cross arm pin, it's just a little bit too much for me, and I know that it's just to set up the hand popping, so then that makes it even feel kind of contrived and forced in that regard. And as much as this match was good and these guys had great chemistry, and you know, they're kind of lucky that this hit again, I'm just going to go back to the fact that like this isn't the gimmick for Skrull. I don't think Skrull, they're kind of, and especially with the post-match promo and all the guys coming out, they're kind of trying to do Roddy against the world, but with Skrull, and I don't think Skrull is the guy for that.
I think you're right. But I did like Skrull's promo, I'll tell you that much. And again, he's more of a character, and they're turning him into this like work rate guy, and I think that's where the mistake is. He's kind of a unique character, but they're turning him into this like, they're trying to make him Steve Regal, and he's kind of not. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, exactly. Again, as I said, I think it's Roddy Against the World worked because Roddy is a super worker who can have great matches with everyone that come across really competitive and athletic, and I don't know that Scroll's that guy.
Yeah, I'm with you. What did you think of his promo, though?
Promo's fantastic. The guy, yeah. I mean, he's, as much as I shit on some of his kind of over-the-top theatrics, I think he's a very solid communicator and has phenomenal charisma.
Yep, and then I will skip the group promo thing because that was just, who cares. But then we get the Lethal Briscoe. They do these mesh promos together to build to their match. I thought that was good, and I thought they had a good match. What about you?
Yeah, they do a good job on doing these kind of promos where they have the guys mirror each other, where they really show by chopping up the promos that they're saying the same thing. But, you know, from both guys, they're saying it in their words, but it's super believable for both people. So I love when you can frame that way. And I think that this feud and these guys kind of chemistry with each other really helps to legitimize Lethal to me as a guy who couldn't be seen in the pantheon of great ROH guys. And I think that even his epically long title run didn't really deliver that for me as much as just his interactions with Jay Briscoe makes Lethal feel like a big deal because they come across very equal and evenly paced, and that's what they show in this match. I couldn't tell if they really clang heads, if that was for real, but
yeah.
It was interesting because someone slapped their thigh, but then they go from there straight into the J-Driller, and that felt like out of nowhere, and it felt like it was set up just to give Lethal a chance to, you know, hit the floor and take a break, so I couldn't tell what was going on. And with all that going on, and it felt like on commentary, Kaz and Cole are arguing about the fact that Daniels is still in the tournament and he shouldn't be overlooking it at all. So it really kind of muddled the middle of the match for me with, you know, the accidental head clang and the commentary not being on point. So that kind of, you know, messed up the middle. But then when they got back into it, I mean, they're just going at each other. These guys, again, as I said, have great chemistry. I always love when Briscoe kind of counters the Lethal injection by just sending Lethal into fucking orbit, launching him off his back. I always think is great. And in the end, you know, Lethal couldn't get the Lethal injection, but Briscoe, you know, can't get it with the J-Driller, but he just hits a big forearm and a big lariat and he takes the pin. And I think these guys have they do a really solid job of having back and forth type brawling, epic fight kind of encounters with each other that always really just hits my sweet spot, even with the middle of the match kind of suffering from all of that kind of chaoticness.
Yeah, I'm with you. Now, here's a couple questions. One, do you feel Lethal feels more legitimized by Briscoe because Briscoe is such a convincing promo?
It's part of it. It's that, yeah, it's that Briscoe feels real and important, and it does have to do with this promo. And then because Briscoe treats Lethal like his equal, and in their matches they come across so equal, it bumps Lethal up to that level.
All right, now here's the second one. What does Kaz have to offer in color commentary here? Having Adam Cole out makes sense because these are fighting to fight him. And I can understand having Kaz out when Daniels is fighting because they're tag partners. Well, what does Kaz bring to this? This is just to make... To me, it was they booked it for convenience instead of booking it to make sense, that having all three out there for commentary.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, you're right. And that's what it was. It was that they wanted to have Kaz out there to point out that Cole is overlooking Daniels rather than just having it be Daniels, which I think it would make more sense to just have it be Daniels because he's out there looking to see who he's going to face in the next round. But they wanted to tell the story that Adam Cole was overlooking Chris Daniels completely because they wanted, you know, and it's such a weird thing for ROH to try to pull because all of their stuff is taped and everyone knows everything in advance because of spoilers.
Right.
But they were trying to do the misdirection of, well, Adam Cole isn't even thinking about Chris Daniels. And, he didn't even come up until his tag team partner brought him up on commentary. So that when he wins the tournament, you know, it wasn't so obvious. And I think that in some ways it's just like beating a dead horse and almost making it more obvious trying to do it this way.
It almost feels kind of like back in the day at times Dusty would instruct when he was the booker, instruct all the other baby faces to mention him. And that's how it kind of fell here with Daniels. Kind of mentioning him kind of felt shoehorned and didn't feel organic at all. And I didn't like it at all. overall, I thought the show was solid. You know, it's skippable. It doesn't, you know, nothing that you need to see. But I mean, as a wrestling fan, I enjoyed it. What about you?
Yeah, it's a good way to. It's a good hour of wrestling, and if you're a big fan of the Jay Lethal, Jay Briscoe feud or interactions and everything, and then check that match out. But all in all, there's nothing else that you need to see.
Exactly. All right, man, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
The PWO-PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back, and we're back with the most current edition of NXT TV. And pretty much we get the TakeOver recap video, which was, you know, smartly done, well executed. Hey, it's a WWE video package. What can I say? Any groundbreaking thoughts here, Timothy?
No, I mean, they do a good job. And one thing I will point out is that Nakamura versus Rude is even a much better match in GIF format. So, you know, it really helps in that regard, like for these recap videos.
And these are pretty much the dark matches from the Freeman Coliseum in San Antonio before the NXT special. And we got Ember Moon versus Aaliyah. I mean, I think I told you Ember Moon is from Texas, and she got a nice hometown pop. I thought Aaliyah looked really good here, not just like attractive good, but I thought she looked really like a good worker here, and one of the better matches I've seen Aaliyah do. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, no, exactly. I feel like the same way with you. Even on the part about Aaliyah not looking just good attractive wise. They teased a lot of nice spots. They had really good chemistry with each other. I think that Aaliyah is made to look more important here. And I thought that it was nice that they almost kind of teased WWE, if you're in your hometown, you get beat.
Yeah.
Psychology. And then turned it around and had Ember win. So I think that was kind of nice to, like, play with the psychology that you've ingrained into your crowds. You know, I know it's NXT, but, you know, play off of that in a smart way. I think that that's great. And Aaliyah looked like she was, you know, cunning and able to pull everything off. And there was a slight bit of awkwardness when they were rolling in the middle. But, I mean, yeah. Aaliyah is not super green, but she's pretty goddamn green. And she came from wrestling in Canada where she was not having matches with, you know, top caliber workers. So she's, you know, adapting pretty well. I gave the match 2¾ star, and I thought that both of them looked really good coming out of this.
Cool. Then we got a Sanity interview. It was what it was. It was a typical, you know, Eric Young's a good, solid promo. And the other two guys looked weird. They're trying to understand their, like, they're trying to play a character, but they're not fully invested in the character yet. Is that fair to say, you think?
Yeah, I don't know if either of them understand what's going on. And I think the part of it is that I don't know if they know what's going on. The group doesn't seem to have much focus. And now it's Eric Young with these two foreigners. So even that makes it maybe a little bit difficult. I mean, Eric Young is from Canada, but,
right.
You know, it's North America. But you got a German and an Irishman, or he might be a Scot. No one fucking take me to court for saying the wrong heritage for Big Damo here. But there might be something lost in translation where they're explaining to them what they're supposed to be doing and they don't quite get it, because I don't even know what Sanity's supposed to be. But if you told me it was kind of like, I don't know, Southern Fried kind of hickish down home bayou creeps or meth addicts or whatever, it's still kind of like, oh, okay, I can kind of see it, but it's also a little bit weird. But how do you explain that to someone who doesn't have any kind of touchstone, you know?
Yeah, no, good point. And then we got the Ty Dillinger video, and you could tell the reaction he got it from both shows, especially at the Rumble, really meant a lot to him. And it was a nice little moment they caught here on video. What about you? What do you think?
I noticed that he kind of said some of the same lines, and I heard other people and I, it was probably fucking Brian Alvarez, who's just a terrible human being, saying that, like, this is so scripted and forced. And it's like, just because he's kind of saying the same stuff doesn't mean that it isn't real. And to me, you could see the real emotion on the guy's face.
In his eyes. Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't think that just because he's kind of hitting talking points, or you perceive them as talking points, necessarily means that it isn't real. Because I don't know about you, but sometimes when I tell stories, I tell them the same way, you know,
yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's not the same story. That just means I'm just telling the story the same way, and I hit my kind of words that I say when I tell the story. It's kind of hard not to. So I thought that this was really awesome, and it got me a little bit emotional just, you know, thinking about all how great it was for Ty.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. And then we got the four-way video package and an Asuka promo with the famous line, "Who's Ember Moon?" What you make of this?
I thought that was great, and I'm really excited for that match, because I kind of, from the moment Ember Moon showed up, I just thought that there was something about the way that they were positioning her to be this kind of perfect foil for Asuka. So I think it's going to be a great match.
I'm with you 100%. I think Ember Moon might be the best other woman, besides Asuka, might be the best woman wrestler on the roster on NXT right now. And then we got Ember Moon's reaction promo. Any thoughts here?
Somehow not quite as smooth as Asuka for someone who's having a hard time with English. I think Ember Moon still needs a little help coming across completely natural. And they give her some catch slogany stuff that comes across a little bit too fake. And I know I forgive that in some places that people might question. But, you know, when it works, it works. And when it doesn't, it doesn't. And sometimes it's hard to explain.
Then we get Tyler Bate versus Oney Lorcan. Man, I thought Bate was super over. It's cool that he got over in the U.S. this quickly. 7,000 strong in that building, cheering him. Big babyface reaction. And they have this really good, hard-hitting match that helps both guys. Both guys look good. I wish they'd used Lorcan more than as fodder for most of the time, because the guy deserves better. But I thought this was a good way to debut Tyler Bate on NXT TV. Like, Lorcan's almost become the Juice Robinson of NXT now. You know, what were you thinking here?
Yeah, I mean, and that's such bullshit, because the guy, everything Oney Lorcan does just comes across aggressive and stiff-looking with a lot of just really hard-hitting-looking stuff. I mean, there's a back elbow in here that just looks fucking amazing that he throws to cut off the Tyler Driver.
What about the ground? What about that ground and pound he was doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, the guy, just everything he does looks so fucking snug and just fantastic. I thought that Tyler Bate was selling really well here. And yeah, I mean, the crowd is into him. And midway through this match, I was just like, they need to just go 100% running with Tyler Bate as a pushed guy and not worry about all this UK title mess and the TV show and all that. Because I think this guy is just so fucking over. And I think, and this is coming from me, who's like one of the most ardent, and, you know, I'm not like, oh, I just hate WWE because it's popular, but I don't like the way that stuff is presented most of the time, and it's just not my preferred style of wrestling. But in some ways, Tyler Bate is a guy who I've liked a lot, but I think he is better suited for a WWE style, and he shows it here. They really toned down his move set. He's got his big spots that you know what to look for, the airplane spin, the capo kick, the European uppercuts, and the Tyler Driver, and that's all he needs in his charisma. And you know, his selling, and that's all he needs. And I think that toning him down and having him focus on that really fucking works. The crowd gets behind him huge. And I think it's kind of funny because, you know, there's that tweet that Trent made about comparing Bate to John Cena. And, like, in some ways it works. I mean, Tyler Bate seems like he's the perfect five moves of doom wrestler. This guy is so fucking good at getting his big comebacks, and the crowd's into him. And, I mean, yeah, I'm super into Tyler Bate. I give this 3.25 because, I mean, it wasn't positioned to be an epic all-time great match. It was quick, and it just had a few spots, but both these guys were just so good here that I'm just like, as you said, should this be an undercard match? I could see these two guys having a match that could be main eventing, you know, TVs or pay-per-views. Yep. Or, you know what I mean? These guys are just both so good.
I totally agree. Then we got a Roddy Strong interview, and it was, you know, pretty good. for a Roddy interview. What about you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, Roddy's getting to show some of his personality.
Yeah, and then we got an Authors of Pain interview and, you know, gloating about their victory. That worked, right?
Yeah, I think, oh, God, I'm going to look like an idiot because his name just...
Paul Ellering.
Yeah, Paul Ellering is finally getting, you know, involved in showing off what he's good at here with Authors of Pain, which I think is great. I don't know why it took him so long to let him kind of get going with these guys. But I guess probably because they were waiting until they had the tag titles to really start putting some heat on him.
Yeah, yep. And then we got, they do the, they show backstage with Nakamura, and they have Chris Hero, Cassius Ohno looking on. Totally, they're foreshadowing here, so I like that bit, you know. And Ohno going, hey, you hate that. You don't want to ever see, it sucks to lose like this, blah, blah, blah. I thought this was well done, and we get a Rude interview. And I loved his reaction to the questions. What were your thoughts on this whole segment?
Yeah, I think it was weird that Hero was there, but it's cool because it does set up something. Again, I mentioned it when we were talking about TakeOver, but I thought the promo was perfect for Rude because he's like, why are you asking me such a stupid question? And also, what the fuck are you talking about? I won clean. I won that match.
Yeah.
I wasn't lucky. I didn't cheat. I didn't do anything. I beat him because I'm the better man. And it's just, it's perfect because in some ways he's right, but in other ways you know that he's an asshole. So
yep.
You kind of don't agree with him.
Exactly. And then we got the Corey Graves piece. What you make of this, man?
Oh, God, this was the real kind of tearjerker, I think. My wife was watching this with me, and she said, I didn't know he used to wrestle, because I guess she didn't used to watch NXT back then. And as it's going on, she's like, oh, I used to think he was just the idiot with the tattoos on his neck, and I wondered why he was there. And she's like, now I really, really like this guy. And I'm like, I know, it's so cool to like hear all of his backstory. They did an amazing job here, really putting Graves over and just showing everything. And, God, I mean, it was a trip down memory lane seeing him back when he used to wrestle, because that feels like it was a lifetime ago at this point.
It does. And how young did Renee Young look?
Oh yeah, when they kind of showed some flashes of her in there from way back when.
Yeah, she looked like 10 years younger. I mean, and it's only like 4 years ago. That's just nuts. And then we got
that's what happens when you date a crazy man.
This is true. Then we got No Way Jose versus the Drifter. These guys are always fun together, and this is no exception. Really fun. No Way Jose, super over. He's a character who's going to be over for life, or for as long as they want him to be over. What you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, these guys, great interactions with each other, so perfect, because they're just so diametrically opposed, and yeah, they just really work well together. And it's impressive, because these are two, I mean... No Way Jose did start out in CWF, so he's got good fundamentals and basics, but realistically, these are kind of seen as NXT guys. They didn't have long stints on the indies, and they have really good matches together, which is becoming kind of the rarity in NXT, is that you have matches that are really good that don't involve a guy that had some indie cred, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in this setting, they're able to pull it off really well, and the crowd is just into everything that they do, and yeah, I thought this was a lot of fun, but yeah, this one 2¾ star. I think it just wasn't quite there to that next level. Great, but it was a lot of fun, and the crowd was hot as shit for it. So
yeah,
good stuff.
Now, one match that did not air, but it was a dark match. There was Wolfgang versus Aaron Solo. It was a total squash. Wolfgang went over big. Why do you think they didn't show it?
Huh, that is interesting. Maybe because of Aaron Solo, maybe they don't want to...
Feature talent that is under contract, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that could be part of it. Who knows? I mean, maybe it just didn't work for them because it was so one-sided and they don't necessarily want to tell that story with Wolfgang yet.
Yeah.
Who knows? That's kind of interesting, but Wolfgang was over. The crowd was into him.
Oh, yeah. Wolfgang was over big, yeah.
It's really interesting to see that the UK tournament made these guys stars, because you wouldn't... I mean... You know, for the NXT crowd, because I wouldn't expect that so many of the people there at NXT in Texas. But I guess it is the Rumble weekend, so a lot of hardcores were in town. But I mean, you know, still, it's kind of interesting that they were all so over, or at least Bate and Wolfgang were so over.
Yeah, I mean, Bate was way over than Wolfgang. Wolfgang got a good reaction, though. Overall, I'd have to say I enjoyed the show. I mean, I got to see it twice now on tape and live, pretty much. I enjoyed these matches live when I saw them, and I enjoyed them. I enjoyed them here. What about you? What did you enjoy the show?
Yeah, I loved it. I think that it would have. I'm really jealous that I didn't get to be there, because it seems like it would have been quite the kind of experience seeing all these matches live and kind of building instead of chopped up this way.
Yeah, it was true. It was a treat to see the British guys. I ain't gonna lie. Now, with that said, what you got? Anything you got to plug or anything?
Let's see. It's that dicey area where you don't want to plug something until it's been recorded, right? But I've got Lucha Undead episodes coming out. Some decent interviews should be coming through over the next couple weeks. And I'll just say that there will be another episode of We'll Do It Live coming out very soon. And we're going to be going international. So definitely hitting something.
Sorry.
From outside the United States. Oh, no problem. Otherwise, follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Yeah, follow me at Titans O Wrestling. I might have to change that. I don't know. We're doing the Goodwill Tour to Parv. He's just going to be doing Where the Big Boys Play and an occasional pod blast, as he likes to call them. He's retiring. Letters from Kayfabe dropped their last episode. We're recording our last Titans tomorrow. So check that out. Hopefully it'll be fun. And we'll reminisce. Hopefully Parv won't be crying like a baby. Or probably Johnny. Johnny will probably be crying like a baby. So check that out. Folks, thanks for listening, and have a good night.
I'll be at the reception desk, sketching on flesh my perception.